Let's raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over.
The word we're alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of the Q-Zero Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here today with another very exciting, very informative roundtable into the world of theater. Today we are discussing the music director, and we've lined up a panel of some of New Hampshire's best. Unfortunately, we did have originally a panel of four lined up, but due to some scheduling conflicts and other things, two of them had to bow out. But we still had a great discussion, and I think you guys will get a lot out of this, whether you're an actor, a director, or you know, just an audience member. I know that you probably have a bit of a better idea of what a music director does versus a stage manager, some of the other positions, but I think you'll also learn something. I think there's a lot more to it than you'll understand. It's a very difficult position and one that can really make or break a lot of productions. So without further ado, I'm going to throw it over to my past self and our panel of music directors. I hope you enjoy this discussion and deep dive into the world of music directing. Welcome to our music directors roundtable. I'm here currently with two of New Hampshire's premier music directors. We might be joined by one or two more later, but we'll just start with the two gentlemen that I have now. So we'll start with Tim and then to Jake. So if you just want to tell everybody who you are, where you're from, and how long have you been music directing for the theater or just working in theater in general?
I'm Tim Goss. I'm from New Market, but I'm all around New Hampshire. And I've been, the first show I music directed was Little Shop back in, I guess it was 2011. So I've been doing this for almost 10 years now, so 9 years.
My name's Jake Hudgens. Funny, actually. So I grew up in Hampstead, but I just moved to Newmarket, Tim, 6 months ago. So what do you know? Small world. I've been music directing for about, how many years now? 6 years? 5 years? 5 or 6 years? Somewhere in there. They all start to blur together after a while. Ever since I was a senior in high school, I started.
Nice. And before that, were either of you like onstage performers, or have you always been musicians? And like, how long have you been, practicing your craft in general?
I only got into theater my freshman year of college, which is when I started music directing. I'd always like listened to soundtracks and everything and cast albums, but I'd never like done anything theater related. But I've been playing the piano for 21 years now.
I can't think of many things I've been doing for 21 years. And Jake, what about you? Did you start on stage or have you always been a musician?
I've been taking piano lessons for, since I was in elementary school. But I was on stage for a decent portion of my life since middle school. And I made the transition over to the Pitt Orchestra when I was in high school, since I just couldn't keep up with the dancing anymore.
Happens to the best of us.
But yeah, and then I found that you could have all of the glory that you got when you were on stage and not have to show up until the week before when you were a Pitt musician. So I did that for a little bit, and I transitioned into music directing from there.
Can both you guys kind of talk about the different, just, you know, maybe give a brief rundown of the organizations you've worked with, ones you've really enjoyed, shows that you've done, like if you've got a favorite show or something, just so we can get a taste for, you know, your background and your styles.
I tend to work in youth theater. I'm the music director in residence of Wyndham Actors Guild's youth program. Done a lot of work with Kids Coop Theater in Derry as well. And occasionally I make the trip up to high school students as well. I just did Pippin with Dan this spring. And I've dabbled in college theater as well at St. Anselm and Boston University.
I have also worked with Dan. I did Urinetown last year, I think it was.
Yep.
that came up great, I thought. And I do work with the Peterborough Players every summer, except for this summer because they've shut down, of course. I work closely with Dive In Productions, located out of Portsmouth. And I've been I bounce around all over the place. I've done a show off Broadway. I did that last year. And I do school theater. I do community theater. I've done less music directing recently. I do more pit work now. But yeah, I will occasionally do a show if it really speaks to me.
If you could, you know, specifically talk, like, what drew you into musical theater specifically, as, you know, both a music art form or just as an art form in general?
Well, I think, you know, here in New Hampshire, that's one of the few consistent places for musicians to perform. The kind of live music scene is fine, but, you know, not as vibrant as in a bigger city. I'd say it's just the opportunity to perform and the collaborative nature of things as well. You know, I always met my best friends through my performances and through music, and theater was a place where they all seemed to congregate. So I just kind of followed the crowd, as it were.
So I've always been interested in stuff that tells stories through music, and I guess musical theater is literally the best place to do that. So, like, I remember one of my first loves was, like, Peter and the Wolf. And so, like, the most basic kind of telling a story through music. And when my friend was like, hey, you should come music direct Little Shop. And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I'll try it out. I just kind of fell in love with doing that.
For those who might not know, could you give a brief rundown of, you know, what a music director does? I mean, you know, I'm sure most people know directs the music, but, like, what are your major responsibilities on a production?
A lot. You gotta teach the music to everyone. Make sure you know, like, when you're going to be teaching the music to everyone, depending on difficulty of the song. Recording tracks for people so that they can practice on their own, being at the rehearsals, running the rehearsal, music rehearsals, that is, and basically, like, monitoring all the music up until the show opens, and then usually conducting a pit band, getting together all the members of the pit band, rehearsing with them separately. It's a lot.
Yeah, and I'd say frequently, especially around here, the music director tends to be the pianist as well, both for rehearsals and for the performances of the show. Occasionally I've had to do some sound design as well. So you wear many hats as the music director.
Yeah, as we definitely all do, especially on the community level. I know, Tim, I know you've done some work with the Peterborough Players and some other professional organizations. Could you maybe talk about, like, what would you say is the biggest difference between working with a community theater and then working with, a larger professional organization?
I would say the biggest difference is, the time frame in which you have. Peterborough, like, for a lot of community theaters, it's usually, like, you've got, like, 2 months, two and a half months to get a show up. Peterborough, we have 12 days to put together an entire show.
Wow.
Oh, God. It's pressure like crazy. So you got to teach everything within that tiny, tiny frame and get everything together within that small frame of time. The other thing, though, is that you are dealing with professionals. So, like, it's much more of a streamlined thing as opposed to being like, oh, so-and-so isn't pulling their weight. I've got to work extra hard with them to make sure that they are up to speed. So that does kind of even out everything because they are also accustomed to that really fast rehearsal process.
What makes directing for musical theater different than other types of musical endeavors, whether it's a band or an orchestra or something like that? Like, what makes musical theater unique?
So I have done a lot of work with more like pop rock bands as well. And I'd say really the biggest difference is that in a musical theater setting, you have a really established concrete framework that you have to make the music support. Right. As Tim was saying, it's all there to support the story. Right. So everything from where you focus in terms of diction and phrasing to your dynamics to every little bit about the music has to support that story. You don't really have, I would say, the freedom of interpretation that you might have in other contexts. Right. You have to really make sure that everything is tight. It's a really tight art form, but that creates a really astounding final product if you can get it right, just in terms of its ability to enhance that storytelling.
coming from a classical background, there's much more, it's funny because there's actually much more room for flexibility coming from a classical thing. So it's like halfway between a band with, you can like, you know, you can improvise and you can really do whatever. A difference between it's right in between a band and like an orchestra. Because like within an orchestra, you have to play what's on the page exactly how it's written on the page, because that's how the composer wrote it. I'm not saying you don't have to do that with theater, but like you're definitely given much more breathing room to make it your own kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I've played with, you know, coming from more of my background, I've played with drummers who have such a hard time putting the accent on the right beat every single night so that the dancers can, you know, really find that spot and hit their moves.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, kind of chime in there that I've seen, you know, just as a stage director, I've seen some like incredible musicians who struggle to be able to either, you know, direct or even just play in the pit for a musical. Where, and I think the thing that always impresses me the most, not that you want this to happen, but when things are going wrong, the ability for a good musical theater director to be able to get the pit to, you know, jump to a different measure or vamp longer than they were used to, and just the in the moment and almost improv skills of a good musical theater director to me is just mind-blowing. Like whenever I see it happen, and you know, depending on the setup, whether they're barking into a microphone that only the other musicians can hear, or they're just trying to yell over the pitch, you know, like, you know, jump to 32 or vamp three more times or whatever it ends up being. You know, I just, it's definitely a very unique type of conducting, or, you know, music. And have you guys also, like, you know, seen a little bit of that where, you know, you've got a great musician and then you put them in your musical theater pit and they're just, whew. I mean, Jake, you talked a little bit about some drummers that, you know, struggle with everything needing to be exactly the same.
I mean, you see that, especially coming from the rock players. I've also seen a classical pianist, brilliant, brilliant concert pianist, who just could not find a way to fit herself into a you know, the sound of a, you know, we were doing, not to name the show, but it was like a more of a jazz kind of big band style show, and she just could not fit herself in. But on the other end of it, you know, I'm lucky enough to have in kind of my core rotation of players a few musicians who are actors and who have spent plenty of time on stage. And so they're really adept at solving those problems that you brought up, Dan, at being able to figure out where the actors are going, at where we need to go to support the actors. So that's been really helpful in my experience.
I completely agree. I myself had to learn way different skills to be able to play musical theater stuff than opposed to, you know, my classical stuff, which I'd been, you know, doing for years and years and years and years. Like, I needed to learn how to comp. I need to learn, you know, how to improvise, kind of, sort of. And I've also, speaking of drummers, I also know that a lot of drummers don't read sheet music. They just kind of feel the groove. It is sometimes really tricky to find a drummer that can read sheet music competently enough to be able to do a show. Because a lot of shows you can't, like, feel out unless they're already rock shows.
Yeah, drummers and guitar players, I found, have been some of the... guitar players.
That, exactly. Those are some finding good guitar players who can read music is, they are a diamond in the rough, honestly.
That's so interesting. You know, you're right. Like, there is a very specific skill set, and especially in, you know, depending on the community you're in. You know, if we were in like a large city like New York, I'm sure they can find musicians. And but, you know, the smaller you get, and I know that. Just from my time stage managing at like the Palace, just some of the calls that they have to put out to get the musicians are sometimes more, you know, they're paying the musicians significantly more than the actors, because certain instruments, it's just so impossible to find somebody that can play that instrument for musical theater.
If you play hard, you're set forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or I remember when we, you know, even on a community level, when we did Fiddler on the Roof and our music director insisted on having the full, like, whatever it was, like 26, 27 piece orchestra, that we found an accordion player who the only show he ever plays is Fiddler on the Roof, because very few other musicals have an accordion, but he's just like, I love this part, so I don't mind that, you know, I play this show four times a year and that's all that I do. You know, you both do a lot of you know, community and, you know, semi-professional or recreational theater, as I, you know, like to call it. So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what are the unique challenges of working with your, you know, your amateur or your recreational performers versus, you know, if you had somebody with like a lot of training?
I mean, I think it's basically, you answer your own question, is that some of these people do not have a lot of training. And even like, I found a lot of, and I guess this is true in professional theater too, but to a lesser extent, people not being able to read sheet music is really hard. So you just end up plunking out literally every single line unless they've heard it before, kind of thing. And a lot of people come in not knowing their own vocal range. So you have to find that out before you can like even audition people, really. It's a lot of putting together, like, you have to teach them about themselves before you can work with them.
Yeah, and I think kind of going off of that, and the lack of formal training, which is so important in a musical theater setting, you know, you see all the time people who don't know how to sing in a healthy, sustainable manner, and who you know, if they continue to sing the way that they're doing it, they'll never make it through a tech week, right? They'll never, and it's because musical theater parts are hard, especially more recent musical theater pieces, right? Some of them are borderline unsingable unless you have exactly the right person. And if you have someone who is trying their very best to do it but just doesn't know how to keep their voice safe and healthy throughout the you know, the long slog in the marathon of a run, then, you know, you might end up with someone cracking on stage or losing their voice come Sunday.
Right, which is only more mind-blowing when you do get to a professional level, and, you know, they might have more training, but if you're on Broadway and they're doing 8 shows a week, or even, like, some summer theaters in New Hampshire do 5, 6, 7 performances a week, I can imagine the vocal strain and emphasis on vocal health has to be even harsher when you're working with actors like that.
Right. One of the things I check for is like, who knows how to mix, because like that's usually the first thing that people don't know about. People are like, if I can sing higher if I push, and it's like, no, let's say you destroy your voice.
Can you give a layman's term definition of mix for those that might be uninitiated?
It's the voice between kind of so here's the thing, is like everyone has a different definition. The way I would say mix is, it's like, it's your head voice and your chest voice mixed together so that you can go higher with less, with like little to no strain. And people are like, but that sounds fake. And it's like, but it's not. It doesn't sound like that to us. It sounds like that to you, because you're using different muscles. Basically using your voice in a way you haven't used it before, I promise.
Yeah, I'd say that's a very fair definition, Tim. I think that's a really good definition.
And then building off of that, you know, we're talking about the you know, the challenges of community theater. I'm sure that those challenges are even bigger, but slightly different when you're working with youth theater, and where you said you do a lot with the youth theater. Can you specifically talk about what you run into when you're working with youth, which also I think has a wide range? You know, there's a big difference between, you know, working with your elementary schoolers versus working with your middle schoolers versus working with your high schoolers.
Kids these days, they really run the gamut in terms of their commitment to a production, in terms of their experience coming into a production. You have kids who are doing it because this is their social life, this is what they do for fun. And you have kids who are taking 5 dance classes a week, or, you know, have years and years of vocal training and are, you know, doing 3 productions at a time, right? It really, you've got people all over the spectrum in terms of their level of engagement with theater. And I think that's one of the rewards of it, is that you see people who might not have had so much experience or exposure to theater and the rehearsal process, find the joy that comes out of it. I remember I was doing a cabaret with, and I had invited my friend who is a great singer, but had never sung in a formal setting before. And just the first time he was experiencing that feeling of being part of a, like a four-part harmony phrase, he just like started running around the room cackling and like laughing in excitement. And that was when we were in high school. So you still see that. I would say the challenge, right, especially the real challenge comes from, you know, younger people who really, really want to do the part as written, no tweaks, no adjustments. And like we were saying before, you know, some of these parts are just not written for developing voices, for voices that are maybe available to the company doing it. So occasionally you have to make tweaks, and it's frustrating for the performer because they can interpret that as a sign that they're not good enough or that they're not capable enough, when really I think it's just a sign that you're a 16 or 17 year old and you're not, you know, performing at the level that people who are in national touring companies can do. Right. And it's hard. I remember when I was 16 and I thought I was going to be the next, you know, great rock singer. And then you realize your limitations and your kind of where things are. And now I'm, you know, I think I'm doing things that are a lot better suited for myself as a musician because I have been lucky enough to kind of have that foresight.
I definitely echo everything Jake says. It's all true, especially the like experience thing. Like, you got some that are like, wait, that, why are you even in the community theater? You should be on like Broadway. Mm-hmm. To why are you even here? That's it. Why are you even here?
Couldn't carry a tune if you gave them a bucket.
Right, exactly. And it also, you also find that on the side of this is their social life, they don't really care about the show itself. They don't really care about putting on a good show, which is, that's hard. That's so hard to get around. You have to have a lot of patience with that in terms of like making sure that they know their part, even if they don't want to do it, or, you know, it's like they're just, their mom just signed them up because, you know, well, little Johnny needs something to do for the summer kind of thing. Especially working with young kids, you have to be really, really, really patient, and they get off track a lot. Like, you need to be able to corral them, and especially big shows where all, you know, everyone gets a part kind of thing. Mm. Those shows are hard for me to do because, like, I do have patience, but I have only a certain amount. So, like, making sure everyone's quiet, making sure you get everything you want to done, but also balancing that with giving them enough time to learn it, and not being too, I guess, harsh with them in terms of being like, I need you to be able to do this, sing louder, when they physically cannot sing any louder, that kind of thing. It's, yeah, you just kind of have to, you have to find a healthy balance of like when to push them and when to be like, that's all we're going to get. Not aesthetic, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would not call youth theater childcare, but sometimes it can be kind of on the verge, on the cusp of it. Sure. I remember, yeah, I was doing, I did Into the Woods with Wyndham Actors Guild's youth program this summer, and we had, I think, 54 kids in the cast.
Wow.
Ranging from ages 19 to ages 8. So, yeah, it was, and, you know.
Did they perform at the NHTAs?
They did, yes.
Oh, okay. They were great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, they worked so hard. And that was one of the really great and kind of heartwarming things to see, is that sometimes when you get a great group of kids, right, the older kids really start to take on that mantle of leadership and show the young kids how to, you know, conduct themselves backstage, how to effectively rehearse, how to kind of join in the cast as a social element. It's really cool. It's really cool to kind of see that proverbial torch being passed down.
I mean, and I'll speak from, you know, experience. I think sometimes you can even get On the opposite, you're right. You can get almost sometimes even like a better performance when you've got the right group of kids than you can get from a lot of adult groups. And, going back to that production of You're in Town that Tim and I did together, an opening night during the opening number, we were performing the show with tracks instead of a live band for a number of reasons. And like we had zero problems up to that point. And then opening night, the computer crapped the bed during the opening number. And the kids are up there singing these incredibly challenging, what were they, like 8, 12-part harmonies?
They're like 8-part harmonies, yeah. They're nasty. Yeah.
And it was during the part when they're like singing in this like dissonant round, and there's just all this chaos, and the music just stopped altogether, and the kids sounded beautiful. I almost want to be like, do we need to bring the music back in? Because, there is this a cappella section coming up, but they just, even before then, it was just so powerful. And I feel like it was one of those things where like none of them panicked, because I don't think they knew to panic, which is something you don't always get with adults. Sometimes that they freak out when things go wrong because they're like, oh god, the kids were just so focused and in the moment that they're like later we're like, oh, maybe we should have panicked. And I'm like, no, you did exactly what we wanted you to do. We've been talking a lot about auditions. In an audition, what exactly is the music director's job? I think that sometimes people have misconceptions of, either like what you're looking for or how you're evaluating somebody. And then like also, if I can talk about that, like how does a music director prepare for auditions? Is it just simply like knowing the ranges of different characters, or do you put in like similar artistic work that a director, a stage director or a designer would look in? Like what do you do before an audition, and then what are you doing in the auditions?
I mean, before an audition, like when I've cast shows, I tend to be on the side of if someone can sing well enough and they're a great actor, right, if they're right for this part, let them have that part and we'll make the music fit. Because I think just from my own experience, I would much rather see an actor that can sing than a singer who can act on stage. That's just me. Yeah. So I wouldn't say I defer to directors there, but I do think that, I tend to go into an audition with more of the philosophy of let's just see what this person can do, how they present themselves. If I think their voice is something that fits this character, right? I'll look at ranges. But again, when you're in youth theater, sometimes you don't have the luxury of being able to cast someone with the perfect range for that part. I would much rather have to tweak things a little bit and have someone who has a really, strong voice for the part and who is a bang-up actor than and cast someone who maybe can hit that high A consistently, but sings through their nose all the time and can't act.
I completely agree. I never memorize ranges or anything like that. I know like the rough range. I'm like, what's like the highest part? What's the hardest part of this show for this track kind of thing? Like I'll usually go into auditions with that. I'll know all the music just obviously because that's my job, but like, one thing I tell people in auditions is like, I don't care if you forget your words. I don't care if you, forget your notes. I really don't care about that. What I want to know is what's your tone quality? Does it fit a character does it fit a character? Like I get it. Everyone has nerves. Like I don't care if you screwed up your monologue. I don't care about that. That's also not my wheelhouse anyway, monologue. I'm more looking for tone and like, do you sing through your nose or do you have like a really nice kind of lovely supported sound?
Yeah, I think in the case of like an extreme range issue, like if you have a Jean Valjean that you're casting, if you're casting a Rapunzel into the woods, I think that's what a callback's really good for is you can take the people who you think might be candidates for that and say, all right, we're just going to plunk notes for a little bit and see if you can get up there.
Completely agree. Yeah, I like callbacks. I'm usually like callback if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of like calling everyone back and then going through everyone again. I'm like, this is just a waste of time. Why didn't we do this earlier? Unless it's like that heated up competition.
I really appreciate that both of you said, you know, put a strong emphasis on the acting. Performers think that, you know, they walk in and they think that all you are judging and that we're judging in an audition is the quality of their voice. But like, we want the total package, right? There's some people that walk into our auditions that have, you know, the voice of an angel, but they're dead behind the eyes and everything might sound perfect, but they're, you know, they're here for musical theater, not theater music, if that makes sense, right? I don't know if there is a way to articulate this, but talking just about acting through a song, like how is it different than singing, like, you know, singing a song like either in a rock band or what exactly sets, you know, acting through song and musical theater music apart from different types of music?
For a pop group, right? In a pop group, I'm just myself, right? I don't have to worry about acting. I mean, maybe some people have a stage persona that they put on, but you don't really have to worry about carrying a character on your back or carrying a dramatic arc on your back, which frees you up to, again, do things just the way that you would do it. But, you know, again, like I think everyone here has been saying, it all goes back to the story.
Basically what you just said, like a lot of pop singers, rock singers, just any concert singers, solos, bands, artists like that, they will, you know, they can sing a heartfelt song and the lyrics mean a lot. Like, definitely don't discredit lyrics, but they're not singing with a character. They're not singing, you know, their voice may convey the emotion, but they're not acting. So like when you hear someone sing a really sad song in a band, it's much different than seeing someone sing a really sad song in the context of a story while, you know, acting their heart out and making you just weep uncontrollably.
Yeah, I think that's the money word, is context, right? Is that in a, you know, in another setting, there might not be that context that supplies the song with the meaning that the actor really has to draw out, right? Like, right. You talk about how songs can be interpreted in another number of different ways in the pop or rock sphere. That doesn't happen in musical theater. There's pretty much always, with a few exceptions, there's pretty much always a concrete feeling or event that this is evoking.
Right. Serving the text around the song and not just how you want to sing the song.
Right. Like, you may have some awesome ideas for this song, but save it for a cover album.
I love it. I feel like we've kind of harped on a lot of, like, challenges and mistakes and things. So let's put a positive spin on these things. What sort of things make you excited and that you enjoy seeing both in a audition, and then, you know, what sort of things make you want to work with an actor over and over again in their rehearsal habits and things like that?
In terms of an audition, like a killer audition, someone bringing in something not commonly done. Like, I can only play when he sees me so many times before I want to beat someone to death with a hammer. So that's something I always like seeing, when someone pulls something out that I'm like, oh, I would never have thought to bring this. That's a cool idea. And then also nailing it. That's the other thing. When someone's really good, obviously, that makes me really happy. And especially if we're like looking for one character for a long time, and then suddenly you hear that voice, so you're like, oh my god, that'd be perfect for this. Like when we did You're in Town, when we heard him sing, when we heard our Bobby sing, it was just like, good. That's what we need, kind of thing.
Once you've worked with someone on a show, you know, I've met so many great people in theater, and it's just awesome to see them come back, or maybe someone you weren't expecting to see at an audition show up, and you're like, yes, I get to spend another 2 months with them. I mean, that's, you know, if I'm filling out my pit orchestra, I'm asking the people that I enjoy spending time with first, because you're spending a large amount of time cooped up in a very small space with them, right? Both for the actors and especially for your musicians. So I think, you know, just the quality of people is something that really is exciting and makes me happy.
Especially in a pit band setting, that's a very good point. Like, I have, if I'm music directing a show, and I have one drummer that I will always go to, because he and I just click so well that he always knows like what I need from him. He knows all my weird hand movements. He knows exactly what they all mean. And he's always everything that I need from a drummer. Same with a bassist / guitarist I go to all the time. We're the three of us are like super close, and basically we're like all we can read each other's minds basically.
Question just kind of popped into my head. I know where we get our actors from, but when it comes to filling out your pit, do you hold auditions? Do you get demo reels? Do you just hire your friends? Like, how, like, say I was a musician and I want to join the New Hampshire Community Theater pit orchestra scene, how would one go about that? Like, where do you find your musicians?
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
Yeah, there's a lovely board, lovely page. It's call for pit musicians Greater Boston area. That's where I get all of mine. Unless it's like, yeah, that's where I get all of mine actually. There's been times where that's changed, and I just know someone. I'm like, can you play, you know, I don't know, keys 2 for me or something like that. If I know they're really good. Keyboard players are different because I no longer really go on that for that, because I have my people who all usually pull through for me.
Do you ask for like a sample, or do you need them to play for you? Like, what, you know, after you throw out the I need, you know, keys 2 and an oboe, and you hear back from like 4 or 5 people, what's your next step after that?
Depends on the show. I mean, like, some shows are way harder than others. I did Dogfight and I needed people who could really play, so I had them audition. But for like a show, like a youth show that I did last year, I was like, can you breathe? Great. Show up.
Yeah. I would say auditions are fairly uncommon around here. It does tend to be more on word of mouth. You might get a testimonial from someone else, you know, I mean, it does go back to that. Everybody knows everybody at Uj, right? I think pretty much everyone. There's maybe 1 or 2 degrees of separation. Everyone who's an active pit musician, in terms of breaking in, it's kind of hard, I'd say, because a lot of music directors do have their stable of people that they go to. And, you know, when you're comfortable with someone and you like someone, you know, you don't always see a reason to go somewhere else. But I'd say the exception is if you're doing something like the wave of Mamma Mia's that took over everyone's life with. I am just at the end of my 6-month vacation from Mamma Mia. I told myself I wasn't taking any more for 6 months, right? Because they're just, oh man. But you know, there's 4 keyboard parts in that. There's 4 keyboard players. And most people don't have 4 keyboard players in there, and they're kind of like go-to stable. So, you know, I got a call a couple times to go play a keyboard for places that I had never worked before. So I'd say that's, you know, sometimes you'll get a show that is kind of making the rounds and does kind of pop and like let some new people in. Other than that, it's pretty much connections. And as Tim said, Facebook.
I kind of want to, you know, talk a little bit more about your peep musicians. I know, like, as when I was still a performer, my favorite rehearsal during Tech Week was always the first rehearsal that the drummer showed up to, just because to me, like, the 2 most important parts of the pit, the drums, and then, like, depending on the show, like, either the keys or the guitar. What makes a good pit? What's the most important part of a pit? What are, you know, certain shows have tiny pits, certain shows have 27-piece orchestras. Like, where do, you know, how do you factor those things in? And you know, just talk about the dynamics of a good pit.
This might sound bad, but I think it's the ability to know your place. You know, it sounds demeaning, but really, like, the role of a pit musician is to, you know, as we've said over and over here, is to support the story, and more specifically to support the actors as they're telling that story. So it's you know, depending on the show, you might have a chance for your drummer to flash or your guitar player to flash. Played Footloose. I think you directed that one, Dan, with Teen Actor Singers.
Yes, I did.
And yeah, and you know, there's a couple chances in there when the guitar player really just gets to rip. But for the most part, that's not what you're doing, right? You have to be a really strong ensemble player. You have to be able to listen, right? And it's a situation where I think musicianship can frequently trump technical skill. I mean, you always want players with chops, but I'm an adequate pianist. I've been able to do this pretty consistently because I can support the actors and I can give them what they need, which is lucky, because if we were just judging it based off my technical skill, I would not have gigs. So
exactly. One of the most important parts is being able to be a team player as opposed to, look at me, I'm in a band. Like you said, unless there's a part with like a big fun solo, you need to be able to be in the background, because honestly, we're not even as important as the actors. Like, we're important, but the actors come first. And if you're wailing a solo over, you know, some poor guy who's just trying to belt his face off and trying to fight with that, it's not going to work out. Yeah, knowing your place and also your ability to, like, get along with others. There's nothing worse than someone who, like, doesn't get along with the rest of the band because, I don't know, they think they're better than everyone else or whatever the reason may be.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're not going to get rich, especially around here, playing theater pits. No, right? It's not something that you're doing to as, like, a primary form of livelihood for the most part. Or if you are, right, you're not going to be pulling in serious amounts of cash. No. It's something that most people do for fun.
You got to take your ego out of it, basically. Mm-hmm. I think that's 100%. Yeah, 100%. Also, yeah, chops are important, too.
Hello, Q0 fans. Q0 business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q0 sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q0 to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q0 possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q0 in their lives. We have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q0 Theater Cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q0 revolution, head on over to czthetater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
I say the same thing with my actors. You know, I always tell my students, I mean, depending on the age group I'm working with, I use different language, but I usually say I'd rather have, a room full of B talent and, that'll give me a better show versus a room full of A talent where they're all A-holes and I'm just going to be miserable and the show's not going to be cohesive. So I'm sure it's the same thing. It's probably even worse, in a pit when a lot of times you guys are stuck in, you know, again, a pit or in a glorified, you know, large closet or small closet or, yeah, corner of the stage. Talking about, like, placement, You know, I worked crew on a production of Rock of Ages where, like, the, you know, the band was part of the show. They had to be on the stage. They interacted with the actors. Have you had experiences like that? And, you know, what does that either add to a show, or does that add nerves or something like that? Like, when the pit is even more integrated into the show like that?
That's hard to say. I did a show where the music director, the pianist, was literally a character in the show. And I like had to learn lines for the first time. That was fun. But like, I don't, it, for me, it doesn't really change anything because like, I don't, not to be like, oh, look at me. I don't get stage fright really anymore because I've been performing forever. So like, I don't, it doesn't faze me much. The only like thing I usually care about is, do I have to wear darks or not if I'm going to be visible?
Have you had to wear a costume for anything? Like, again, I know for this, for Rock of Ages, the band had to look like an 80s punk. You know, they were a cross between like Motley Crue and Quiet Riot looking up there. You know, have you been stuck in a costume like that or anything?
The show where I had to wear a green, like button up shirt, this like lime green button up shirt with like a vest and like some spats. I had to tie my hair in a ponytail. It was supposed to take place in the 40s, so like that's the only way you could get away with like long hair, because you wouldn't have long hair in the 40s.
Right.
And that's the, well, and I did at Peterborough, I had to wear a, my first show I ever did at Peterborough, I had to wear a janitor's costume to pretend. I don't know why, honestly, because for the other shows that I did where I was in the exact same place, didn't have to wear anything. That was so, like, I don't know why that was, but yeah, there's still one show that I occasionally will do that's on tour all the time, where I have to put on a like a awful, awful Hawaiian vest. It looks so tacky and awful. Generally, no, don't have to wear a costume. Thank God.
I have also done Rock of Ages. I did it at a middle school, which was a trip and a half.
Oh, I've read that script. It's the funniest thing to me for all the wrong reasons.
they did the high school version, which is about halfway. But it was the best middle school production I've ever seen. I did it over at Hampstead Middle School. Incredibly talented and motivated group of kids. But I got to go full 80s. I spent about $40 at Savers on my costume. I got this sweet like blue liquid eyeliner. I look great. I went in for makeup every day. I had these like ridiculous like leopard print tights. It was so much fun. It was a blast.
Do you guys have either a favorite style of music for a show or a composer that you enjoy playing more than others? And if so, why? Like, you know, who's your, you know, what type of musicals get you the most excited to work on?
I mean, Sondheim's always fun if you have the time to shed through the parts, because it's just so artistically rewarding. In terms of maybe things that are more kind of classic and vintage, Frank Lesser's got great, great tunes. Yeah. And I mean, I was in Guys and Dolls last year as an actor, and just some of the harmonies in there, just listening to the band, right? It's so simultaneously inventive and natural sounding. It's awesome. He's a great, great composer.
Fully agree with Sondheim. I adore Sondheim. Playing him is so much fun. Another artist I like playing, which people are like, don't bring it to an audition, but I don't mind, honestly, is Jason Robert Brown, because he is a pianist and his stuff, while it's really hard, does make sense in terms of your fingers and what he's doing. So I like that stuff a lot. In terms of older stuff, I love Lerner and Lowe. A big Lerner and Lowe fan. Basically anything by them, I will be so thrilled to play, to music direct, anything like that.
Is there anybody that you don't like or don't enjoy playing? Either it's too complicated or too simple or just not good. Like, what makes something that you're just not excited to play?
I don't like Rodgers and Hammerstein. I know that's a huge, like... I know everyone loves them, but I cannot stand them. I think they're boring. I mean, like, I'm not saying everything they wrote is boring, but like a majority. I just don't like it. Never clicked with me. I understand why they're important and famous and a big deal. Totally get it. Fully support it. Don't want to listen to it.
You're speaking my language, Tim. I'm similar. I'm like, I get what they did for musical theater, but I mean, I personally don't like any shows before West Side Story. Like, you know, the shows that came out before then. So like anything, you know, older than the 1950s, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is great, but it's not for me.
I don't really know why, but Lawrence O'Keefe has never really done it for me. He wrote Legally Blonde. He wrote Heathers. It's just, I don't know. It's pop music that just doesn't quite hit me the right way. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just not for my ears. So
interesting.
I love O'Keefe, but I've never heard anyone say that, though. Never said that they don't like Lawrence O'Keefe. So that's new for me.
Yeah, it's not a popular opinion, but
I love his stuff. I really do.
I like it. I could, you know, I could see someone having an issue with it. I think it does have. I feel it's always everything Lawrence O'Keefe does is like derivative of a mainstream genre, but not exactly in one. Is kind of how I describe it. Like, you can always go like, oh, okay, this is like a disco song, but not really a disco song. Or this is a Flock of Seagulls song, but not really a Flock of Seagulls song. Yeah. Now, I know, Tim, you've worked on new works, you know, like someone like developing a musical. Jake, have you had an opportunity for that, or you know, worked on something that wasn't like a known work where there might have been some workshopping?
Yeah, so I've done some composing in the past down at Sacred Heart University in Connecticut. I've also done a couple of scoring projects with Theater Kapow here in New Hampshire.
Nice.
I just wrote the score for their production of the Penelope ad, and I've also helped them use some existing music to create a score for their production of Pride and Prejudice.
Excellent. So could you, either of you or both of you, talk to me about the unique challenges of either, you know, working on a piece where you're either creating the music or the show's being workshopped and things are being added or cut? Like, what are the unique challenges of, you know, creating for musical theater?
It's always it's just always changing. So I just did some holiday back in December, and we're even going to do a second version of it where it's going to be even different because we're making changes. But there were so many times where we were just like, all right, after hearing it during this, we're going to be cutting. If you're hearing it during this rehearsal, we're going to be cutting this because we realize it doesn't really flow well. It doesn't flow as well as we thought. We're writing a new song to replace this other song that we had. It's very, you have to be on your toes all the time because it's always moving. Mm-hmm. Nothing's frozen until like hopefully a week before tech week or something. It's always, always morphing and changing.
Yeah, and I think some actors have a hard time creating songs. Like, people talk about originating roles. You're also originating songs, and sometimes they have a hard time, or at least in my experience, finding the phrasing, finding the right way to kind of tackle the song from an artistic standpoint. Again, it depends on the actor, right? I've seen people who have years and years of classical voice training in classical music training just come in and crush it, and then some people who maybe haven't had quite that same background really come in and struggle without a reference recording.
You know, yeah, that makes sense.
That's important. I did, and that doesn't always, that's not always a new work thing too, because I did like Something's Afoot back in like a year ago, and there at the cast recording for that show just came out like 2 months ago. And the show was written in like 1973 or something like that. There was no recording at all for it. And so basically there was no reference. There's no nothing except for like one shoddy bootleg, which didn't really do much because it was in the wrong key. And like something had happened throughout its age where it sped up way too fast. So it was like unusable basically. So you basically have to, you have to be your own reference recording and be very, especially as a music director, you have to be very like sure about what you want it to sound like.
Even for known works, when something's just not what it is on the, you know, Broadway recording, I've seen actors metaphorically poop themselves in a rehearsal, being like, but that's not what's on the album. It's like, well, that's here. Well, can we make it what's on the album? No, you're going to sing what's in the score. In the, you know, for better or worse, not that I want to hate on actors too much, but sometimes they get it and sometimes they don't. So kind of want to wrap up here, and I've got a, you know, two questions that I've been asking all the different types of theater people that we've had on the show. So first and foremost, if you could, you know, give a piece of advice or something you wish actors would to know that would make your life easier or them better to work with, you know, what is that piece of advice you would give to our actors that are listening?
One of the pet peeves of mine, I'll be specific about this one, a huge pet peeve of mine. It's more among, I guess, teenage girls and like maybe like young adult women, is like, there's this certain sound, which is very like right here. And it's very like floaty and it just kind of like falls out of the mouth. I guess Adele is probably the best way to like, the best place I could put that. And when they belt, it's very like whiny kind of thing. And like getting people to not do that in a musical theater setting is so difficult. But you basically have to like pinpoint, like if they're singing, be like, pinpoint that tone, like a certain tone that does sound good, and be like, that, do that all the time. Or like try to equate what you want to something they might know. Like, when, like, for example, in You're in Town, I wasn't quite getting the sound that I wanted out of our Hope. And I ended up saying, think like a dumb Disney princess and sing like that. And it was suddenly like, oh, suddenly everything clicked. And like, that's the tone I wanted.
That's so funny, because I gave her a similar piece of direction in reference to Disney princesses, where I'm just like, whenever you're in the background of a scene and you have nothing to do, I want you to be Snow White lost in the woods. And just like find everything fascinating, but don't focus on anything for longer than 3 seconds. And it was the funniest thing to watch in the background of every scene. She's just like, oh, there's a ruffle in the curtain. Oh, there's a different ruffle in the curtain. My shoes. I didn't know I was wearing shoes. Just, oh, it was great. Jake, same question.
Learn to read music. It makes everything so much faster, so much easier. And you can really just start getting into the heart of what makes the music music, right? You can start to work on phrasing, on diction, on dynamics, on articulation, all of the great things that really take a show and put it to the next level.
It will make your life, it'll make my life easier, it'll make your life easier. It's hard to learn to read music, I get it, especially if you don't play an instrument where you're like, this is an A, and it's always going to be an A. You know, you don't have a specific fingering, you don't have a specific, you know, key. But even learning rhythms, like knowing what rhythms are and like knowing intervallic stuff, it'll make everything easier for you, I promise.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would be the best way for, you know, a community theater or a high school actor that maybe, you know, if they can't take like a music class in school, how would you recommend them going about that? And like, what level of music literacy should somebody be coming into your rehearsal with?
There's tons of resources online, especially YouTube. Like, YouTube is honestly the best teacher in terms of that kind of stuff. Like, and you don't need to like know everything. Obviously, just a basic knowledge, like, you know, a basic knowledge. Know what a triplet is. Like, if you can get up to that level, you're probably solid. Nothing's going to have more than a triplet in it, honestly.
And then this next one's a little bit self-indulgent, but what sort of things do you wish your stage directors knew that would make your life easier or them better to work with?
I've been lucky. I've had, by and large, really great, thoughtful stage managers that I've done productions with. I'd say really the only thing for me is creation of the pit, which is a weird one to bring up, but people put the pits all over the place in terms of their artistic vision. If you have an in-ground pit, that's best, obviously, but a lot of places don't have that. So It's really important to know where you're going to be in terms of A, sound design, and B, conducting. I've been in shows where I've been moved on Wednesday and I no longer can conduct the cast. Wednesday of Tech Week, that being. So you have 2 days to teach the cast how to respond to the pit without seeing a conductor. So that was a little tough. But yeah, I would say plan ahead for that. That's definitely something that will make things a lot smoother during Tech Week.
I definitely agree with that. I haven't really ever had an issue with stage managers and directors and stuff like that. I've been pretty lucky in that regard to not be fighting. I mean, there's been a couple times. but like, I would come out on top generally, which is always nice. But yeah, and like, I guess the other thing is be ready to be flexible with the music, because sometimes the music is harder than anyone anticipated. Like, you know, you can only know so much by looking at a score and playing through a score. Like, you may be like, oh, that's probably really easy. And then you're like, oh my God, this is way harder than anticipated for various reasons. And vice versa also happens. Stuff that I thought would like take a long time or all day to work on or 2 days to work on, we bang out in an hour, and sometimes it just works out that way. So be able to be flexible. And I know that that's not always possible in terms of like how we're running rehearsal, but yeah, I would say be flexible and like prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Well, thanks guys, both of you, for, you know, giving this interview and giving a lot of insight into the world of being a music director. Hope everybody enjoyed this episode. One final time, thank you so much, Jake and Tim, for that delightful interview. It is so great to learn more about my fellow artists, especially those in other disciplines, who I might not, have a full understanding and appreciation for what you do, and I want you to know that I do appreciate you. So that's everything for this episode. Do be on the lookout for some major Q0 announcements in the near future. There's going to be a lot of changes to our future plans due to the ongoing COVID situation. Everything will be on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff, as well as our mailing list. But that's really all I've got for today. So one final time, this is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, and as we always say, support local theater and join the revolution.